Hello and welcome everyone to the SoToxipod, episode 17 or so of season 3. We were just talking about that off air. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining. I'm here with Toby. How are you today?
As ever. Still me.
No change there. We have been off for a little bit because we, amongst other things, had technical difficulties last week.
And the week before.
And we're then in Portugal for a 4-day trip, which, well, it wasn't relaxing to say that for a weekend trip, but very, very fun.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those things where you technically don't get any rest, but in a good way.
In a very good way. We're sleeping 7 max hours a night is just great and fine because the food was great, the weather was great, the waves were great, everything was great.
Yeah.
The people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, especially the people. I mean, we knew the people we were visiting, but like everyone else we met was also lovely.
Which is kind of cool. It took me back to, so kind of the situation for our listeners is that one of our good friends, Brani, who's been a guest on the show, I think in season 1 at some point, he was celebrating his 30th birthday and he is currently in Portugal with his girlfriend. And they kind of have a living situation there with a lot of space. And essentially, and he invited us, so me, my girlfriend and Toby, 3 of us went, and then there were 5 other people that had been invited that we didn't know any of them of, but all we had in common was being invited to the same party. And that's common for a lot of people, but not that you would spend 4 nights together or 3 nights together in an apartment together, mm-hmm. kind of like as a travel group back when you're young, where you just, your parents set you on a bus and you're going off to whatever place for a week with a group and some supervisors, et cetera. And it was amazing because all of us got along so well. And it felt so easy to immediately like really trust one another and just have a great time. It was very special.
Yeah. So the thing is, as you said, right, it felt a lot like being back in a student living situation. It felt a lot like, like the first days of uni, you know, where you meet a bunch of people, and they're all really cool, and you're like testing the waters and getting along and realizing that like there's a lot more people out there than you know. It was really fun. It was really lovely in that sense. It actually made me consider not, because I got confirmation today that I'm getting that apartment I applied for, and it made me consider today to not do that and instead move to a city into a VK.
Well, it's worth considering for, I think you have like 24 hours, right?
Yeah, I accept it, but I have time technically till Friday where I sign the contract.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, wow. You stepped over that ethical line.
What line?
Well, now they're going to like not accept anybody else because they think they have you.
They're a huge housing corporation and they have
It's not an individual person.
And I take over the apartment in like January.
Okay.
They have so much time to find someone else. And the rooms are so like sought after.
Yeah. No. We've just, the place that we're moving into in a few weeks, the people had twice lined up someone who had committed to it, and one of the two had even signed the contract, and both times they canceled. And this was like a couple that had just built a house and was just, you know, eager to move and finish it all. And so it was like the opposite of your experience, I guess. Opposite. Just a couple trying to make it, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, with that, I'd have a bigger moral issue, but they're a huge housing corporation. And if I say no, they're going to find someone like this.
Oh, easy. They probably I didn't know it was a big housing corporation. They probably already have other people lined up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like plan B, C, D, E, whatever. Like yeah. You're out, but maybe you're in if the guy cancels.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. So so much for that. Portugal was awesome though. Coming back here, the weather was just terrible getting off the plane. So I just immediately wanted to turn around and stay on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Go back would have been nice. But alas, here we are. And it's already a few days removed. So without further ado, let's do a very smooth segue into our topic.
Yeah, interesting. When I was looking at, okay, you know, like using a few random generators, see if anything sparks my interest, finding the Winter Olympics, or do you want to do your alcohol first? Because I see you with a bottle in hand. Finding the Winter Olympics, I didn't know it was going to be a relevant topic. But then I started looking into it and realized, oh, it's actually really relevant right now.
It is, especially in terms of also what's going on with the World Cup. And then there's an F1 race later in the year as well. Still Abu Dhabi, right, is also kind of that area. There's a lot of questions around it. And I thought the best thing, this is a funny thing, the best way to express my visual for our audio listeners, my visual, how that tastes on my tongue, I would have a sip of, what was it called, Toby?
So I think what you have there is Palinka.
Palinka, sorry. Yeah, so Palinka. So a colleague of mine, really cool, shout out to Claudia, she gifted me a bottle of her father's self-made schnapps from at home in Romania. So I figured I'd take a sip. And as most people in the West, at least, don't really like it and have a funny reaction to it, and I think I will, because it smells very similar to the one we had in Portugal,
mm-hmm.
Would be an adequate form of expression. So here we go. It's actually not that bad. It's actually...
They're usually really good.
Dude, it's so much better than the one in Portugal. Like, it's pretty burny, but it's not that bad. It's more like really strong vodka.
Yeah, so
when I was traveling fruity, Romania, I thought it was fruity.
No, it's a...
Wash it down with some water.
It's a brand, so it's made from fruit, but it often, I mean, whenever I have when I've had plum brands, like not schnapps, right? Schnapps is usually a bit more tastes usually a bit more of herby. What it's made of. Yeah. But whenever I've had a brand such as our old friend from high school during Carnival, her dad would bring us his pear schnapps or his pear brand. And that never tastes like pears. It's just burn with a slight note of fruit.
I always like those.
I always like those too. They get you fucked up. But I wouldn't describe them as tasting of pear.
Your honesty right there. The mind of a 15-year-old at Carnival.
16.
Gets fucked up, man.
Yeah, so when I was traveling Romania with my friends, we'd had nights where we were on this stuff, and every place in Romania where we stayed brought out water bottles full of this stuff, and it was always lovely. I've never had a hangover off of this.
Fair point. But this one, even though you noticed it was strong, it went down super smooth, which is a weird combination because you usually think one stops the other from happening. Mm-hmm. And yeah, very, very nice. But I think the tone of fruit that you sense probably depends on how long you let it, you know, sit, I would imagine. Because over time, more alcohol comes and more fruit, like stuff will condense and leave.
Oh, you mean in the distillery?
Like, when the thing is made, when it's done with fruit, right? It's left in there, and over time, the fruit turns into like alcoholic juices or something like that, right? Always happened if I left apple juice for 6 weeks standing somewhere, it would eventually turn into alcohol.
And yeah, it does.
I'm just applying the same rational logic.
So that's
sort of that happens. Yeah,
that's
sorry, fermentation. Yeah,
which just turns where sugar is turned into alcohol. By yeast. That being said, Brand or Schnapps is usually the process you described doesn't get them this strong. So usually you put them through a distillery, which concentrates the alcohol over smaller amounts of liquid. I could babble on now about how I think they work, but I don't.
Well, you know. But that already describes it. If it concentrates alcohol in smaller volume, let's say, then it pushes out other elements, right? Which would among that probably be the taste. It makes sense.
But as far as I know, you don't distill over a long time. You distill once. And
no, but rest you probably or... ferment before you distill, I would imagine.
Mm. Gotcha.
So it's like a hybrid.
Probably. I mean, you'd need to introduce
this coming from the experts of how to make palinka.
Hey, man, listen.
Anyway, thank you, Claudia. I will definitely finish that later.
Oh, please don't.
I won't. I'll wait till you get here and I can make you chug it.
I'd love to drink some palinka.
Yeah, I know. I saw on the weekend.
I haven't had palinka in a while. Wait, what are you talking about? What did we drink? What schnapps did we drink on the weekend?
So there was an evening, the Friday night, where we were in the garage all evening. It was a really big garage for people asking. No, it was Thursday. Friday, yeah. And we were celebrating into Brunny's birthday, playing beer pong and everything. And then there was a Flaum schnapps bottle that you and Finn opened. And you essentially, the two of you drank pretty much like, we had one shot at midnight to celebrate Brunny. And then you essentially drank the rest of it with Finn.
Yeah, right. That was plum schnapps that I brought it. It was my birthday gift to Brunny.
And at the end, you were just sitting on Finn's lap and you were just like, yeah, one more.
I wasn't sitting on his lap.
Well, it was a small couch because I was also
sitting. Yeah, okay. I was almost falling off the couch is what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, you were hanging on.
Yeah, I remember. Well, yeah, I remember that.
So, yeah. I'll wait till you get here and we finish the bottle.
Sure.
Good night. Anyway, on to our topic. Winter sports, I think, is the general term you wanted to use.
We can do winter sports. I've been looking into Winter Olympics, but I mean... there is some fun stuff to talk about winter sports in the Winter Olympics.
Well, then you hit off because you started by talking about the Olympics, obviously. So do you want to jump into that first or did you have something else in mind?
No, I mean, I was saying how when I started looking this up, I didn't realize how relevant politically the Winter Olympics would be at this point in time.
Elaborate, please.
Well, Saudi Arabia was the only country to apply to host the next Winter Olympics and thus became the next country to host the Winter Olympics, which geopolitically didn't go over super well. It plays into that whole sports washing thing, right? Of using sports as a tool for soft power, which in one sense isn't terrible, right? A lot of countries used to do this of we'll host the biggest thing. That's how we get our culture out to people. With Saudi Arabia and with Qatar, the human rights situation regarding this and the fact that not a lot of the promises have happened and that the soft power is turning a bit into a hard power thing of we'll host this thing and we'll, you know, not use it to get our culture across necessarily, but use it as a way of showing off our superiority and our wealth.
Do you know why they were the only country to apply for the Winter Olympics?
I didn't read a statement by other countries, but I'd imagine it's got something to do with the huge investment that you have for Winter Olympics infrastructure. And no offense, the Winter Olympics being the least important Olympics. Major sport event or least popular, not important. But least popular major sport event out there, right? You have the World Cup, which is, I'd argue, probably the biggest. You have the Olympics, the Summer Olympics. Yeah, see, there I go. I said the Olympics, and I mean the Summer Olympics. And then you have the Winter Olympics. And, you know, they need a naturally cold country. And if you're not a naturally cold country, you have to make a huge investment to get this going. And what country wants this? We saw Japan, one of the major economic players in the world, already really struggled with the Summer Olympics.
Well, that's a bigger deal, right? As you just said.
Yeah, I mean, it was during COVID and blah, 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 but...
And it got pushed by a year, so there was more pressure to do it eventually.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, though, but why wouldn't more, like, winter countries apply for it, like Canada? I know they had hosted it recently, but there's like, the U.S. could. There's plenty others. Why wouldn't they apply for it? I get the financial burden, sort of, but there's still a lot of, like, fame to be gathered from it. But then again, well, I guess for the U.S., they have the World Cup they're hosting in 2026. They're, like, hosting the next World Cup, so.
Yeah, and I'd imagine there are some rules about not being able to host it X many times in X many years. And fair. I think that, honestly, Canada and America have enough to do with their politics, like, inside their own country. I'm not sure whether, like, international stuff is on the forefront of their mind. Maybe it is, but maybe they're waging, maybe they're judging how much exposure we can get from hosting this event versus that event, and then decided against one or the other. It also depends on how much existing really Olympic level infrastructure you have. You know, they might have a lot of infrastructure for it, but is it Olympic level? I don't know.
I think that's actually a really good segue to the general concern of hosting these kind of level events and the way the decisions are made to grant these particular countries and these areas, or with the kind of context that they have, these kind of hosting rights. And that is, there is absolutely no fundamental for the event to even take place. Everything needs to be created. And that speaks to Abu Dhabi, that speaks, like, the F1 track, that speaks to the Qatar World Cup, all the stadiums that were built. Granted, there's a stadium that was constructed almost completely out of recycled old container ship, like containers from ships, which is pretty cool, to be honest. Just that concept, you know, not the revolving around it. But all this stuff has to be created out of nowhere. And same with Saudi Arabia's Winter Olympics. Think about the climate at this point in time. Like, we're talking about building fucking, like, snowy shit, essentially, in a desert.
Yeah, I mean, they're meant to take place on top of a mountain range. So it'll be cold, but...
I don't know the details, but it cannot... The snow
still has to be created artificially.
There you go. Thank you. So that's going to be a huge cost. Why do you do that? Why don't you limit Winter Olympics to areas that are, that's a whole general other question, but the general area there, they all have that not going for them to begin with. And B, okay, you can argue culturally, it's not as much in their blood. So why, but at the same time, you want to include everybody, but most importantly, and you've hit on this, is the human rights topic. And in Saudi Arabia, to my knowledge, not many people have died, like, crazily when working. I'm not aware of this.
Well, they haven't started yet.
Fair. But I with the human rights, we're obviously talking about women and how homosexuals are treated in that country, and also by the letter of the law there, etc. There's a bunch more other topics. And in Qatar, who's hosting the World Cup that starts in, like, 12 days, they have that issue going for them. There's reports now that based off of a Guardian report, that, like, over 6,000 people died building the stadiums in Qatar. And that's just terrifying. They've also said no alcoholism is allowed, which is very, very popular with a lot of the other world.
Yeah, so,
and that, you know, that everybody has to respect their local rulings, which is no open homosexuality or general, that's, like, illegal, and a bunch of other things, and also their form of punishments.
So here's an interesting thing I thought, I was listening to an Al Jazeera report on the entire World Cup situation in Qatar. And I'd imagine that it was created in quite favorable eye. And for the death during the construction of the stadia, they were mentioning their critical view, so their uncritical view, taking the numbers of the government, were, yeah, three people died, we're really sorry, these things happen all over the world. Then they gave their critical view, which was, yeah, around 50 people died, which isn't good. And then hearing external sources state something like 6,000, you know. This is one of my concerns with this, as well as alcohol. They were mentioning, okay, in the stadia before the game, after the game, and in certified fan zones, you can purchase alcohol like you can in hotel lobbies. And now I think alcohol shouldn't be the main concern here, because the alcohol culture around the World Cup is dangerous and disgusting.
But it's really dangerous if you think about how, if that goes out of order and, you know, turns into an English pub, how they will react and what that could set off.
And that's the same thing with people in the LGBTQ plus community. Is the official report is all people will be welcome here. I don't know if this is something that is stress testable. I'll say it. I mean, listen, the World Cup will happen. This isn't the question. The FIFA is speaking out for it. There's so much money invested. It will happen. And I really, really hope that there will not be a stress test of some of these things.
You know how they could save some of the whole thing? If Qatar now were to basically, or FIFA in general would say, we're honoring all the people that died here, and like the human rights violations, and that's like the honor of the World Cup, we're doing it for them, and kind of change that narrative maybe. And but probably not going to happen. Even the guy who was in charge, Sepp Blatter, he was head of FIFA when they made the decision to give it to Qatar, he came out yesterday and said it was a mistake, it was a wrong decision, and I take full responsibility for it.
Yeah, because like, it's too late even, now.
Yep, fair enough. He's just trying to save his own ass, I get it, but at the same time, like, it's a bad idea. It shouldn't have happened, and FIFA deserves to be blamed.
Yeah, it's a tough situation, and it's not something that individuals can have an easy influence on, right? I mean, from the Qatari perspective, they're doing this to extend their soft power, right? Get people in the country, get advertisement going, raise the perception of the world for them, off them, I should say.
Yep.
So I'd imagine quite a few of these like discourses that are going on are also not great from their PR perspective. But then on the other hand, Qatar holds a huge amount of, not soft power, but hard power these days because of the war in Ukraine. So I really worry that will lead into a position of nowhere, you know, of perhaps there being the opinion of no, we're doing something good here. How dare you disrespect us doing something good? And then knowing that there won't really be that many consequences on a large political scale, a stress test really causing harm to people extending upon the harm that is caused by. The people who died during the construction of this stuff.
Well, on the other hand, though, the risk that Qatar carries throughout this World Cup, and what will be, I guess, in some way a good stress test from a holistic standpoint, if this doesn't go well, the Winter Olympics in Saudi Arabia could be off as well. And general event hosting in this area could be off as well.
The Winter Olympics going off for Saudi Arabia is something good for Qatar, right? They're a contestant.
I think in general, if these, because these regions are often bunched together by people in the West and perceived as all the same, which is something that they do not like, but they kind of have
wrong.
It's wrong. I agree. But they view the West the same way, right? All the same. And so in that sense, mm-hmm. they have to work together from a PR perspective to like up the whole region, because we put them in the same category. So if one of them does something out of line, we're going to apply it, that risk would be, you know, more likely to happen with the others as well. So from this event hosting standpoint, I'm not saying for everything, I'm saying for the event hosting standpoint, I think that's something that they probably have in the back of their mind, that if this really blows up, obviously for them, but it also, you know, can stress test their own region. Yeah, potentially.
But you're assuming a power structure where the West holds the power, right? Where the West calls the shots, and I'm not so sure that the West is in this position right now.
No, I'm just saying that's the one thing that I can think of that might potentially be in the back of Qatar's mind.
Yeah,
with this whole thing. I'm not saying that that's why it's balanced in a certain way, the total scales. I'm just saying that's a general thing they might have in the back of their mind. I'm not saying that's a reason why they have less leverage or something like that.
I mean, you know, of course, surely it is going to be, right? No one wants to be the country where this goes wrong. I just don't think of all the flexibilities that Qatar is saying they are making for this World Cup, I'm really not seeing that many, that much hard proof of them. And I hope that there won't be a position where the alleged flexibility that they're claiming is stress tested.
Well, okay, and that is exactly my point in terms of what I was just saying. I think the one thing that they're going to have in the back of their mind is because there's many commonalities between certain regions hosting big events, such as, from our point of view, the human rights abuse and a variety of other issues that these countries have in common. And because of that, because they have those things in common, if one of the three or four countries that has those three things in common, it doesn't work, then one is less likely to make a decision, the body that makes the decision, FIFA or Olympic, the IOC, whatever committee it is probably less likely to go in that area. And if you want to say the power is from the West, well, if you look at those committees, they are generally structured in a way that most representatives are from, or at least a majority point of view, have the same kind of perspective or of those things, to put it really ambiguously. You get what I'm saying?
No.
All right.
Well, I think I get what you're saying. I just, in essence, I agree, right? Of course, they're going to have it in the back of their mind. And of course, you'd think that there is a common goal of presenting the entire region as safe and as a good investment and as a culturally very valuable a region, which they are. I just don't think that is a strong enough point to, if a stress test comes, to ensure that there won't be some tragedy going on. I mean, I'm talking the worst case here, right? Most likely, just nothing will happen. I'm just saying, if there really is a huge stress test.
Think about. I think it was the Champions League final or some big game. I think it was the Champions League final in Paris, if I'm not mistaken, very, very recently. And there was a big deal because a bunch of fans just jumped and crashed over the fences and stormed their way in, and others were not being let in. There was a big chaos. And the crowd control there was terrible. And the way that it was managed and like everything, I don't know, heavily criticized. But yeah, if there's a stress test like that, as you say, I really am hoping that everything, people just remember, hey, sports connects people and we're all just here to enjoy.
Yeah.
Whatever the sport is, if it's snowboarding, if it's skiing, if it's soccer, football, whatever it is, we're just here to enjoy the same sport. That's the reason why we put this event together.
And so that's the real shame about this is how over the last few years, I mean, I'm not a big football fan in the first place, but this isn't a World Cup about football. This is a World Cup about
politics.
The politics behind it, and that is really a shame. And I mean, we're not sitting here saying, oh, you know, I hope Germany wins, oh, I hope Qatar wins, oh, I hope Australia wins, or whatever. We're sitting here talking about the difficulty surrounding the event, and that is a real shame. You know, you have people out there saying, oh, focus on the football, focus on the football. I'd love to, but there's bigger things going on.
It's hard to ignore some of the things that are related to it very closely, the topic. Like if you talk about, for example, let's talk about our coolest jerseys, right? For the World Cup. Okay, all these countries have released their jerseys. Let's talk about the Danish national team jersey. Okay, the Danish national team jersey, they basically are not printing anything on their shirts because they don't want their country to be associated with the World Cup. Boom, we're at the topic. Like it's so closely related, and there's certain players who aren't going because of it. There's like, it's insane. And it's definitely going to be tainted, or there's going to be an asterisk behind it. On the other hand, there is a lot of cool soccer to look forward to. 100%.
Yeah. I mean, we are Formula One fans, right? Formula One has been in Abu Dhabi, in Bahrain, in Qatar, most recently. For a while, we had a missile attack in the city where Formula One race was this year. You know, we still talked about the Formula One, talked about Mick crashing and all these things. And maybe we should have also been a bit more diligent there, just because it's not as big an event and we just kind of accept it as, okay, here's a race, it'll bring in a lot of money, let's see if it's fun.
I think that's the difference, though, between like, even though an F1 race is a huge event for any country, and in that moment, though, from a fans or audience perspective, it's one out of many, whereas the World Cup or the Olympics is once every 4 years. A race is once every, or 20 times a year. So the perception there is just that it's a much grander, rarer, more special hosting event. So I think that's something to bear in mind there when comparing F1. But at the same time, I remember we talked about the whole missile crisis thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, so far with F1, what are your opinions on, because there's what, I think we just counted three tracks. There's potentially a fourth track coming, you know, we'll see. But there's three tracks at least that are on the F1 calendar. How has F1 managed to integrate that? Should the other events maybe learn from that? Because these are countries that are also, it's the same countries essentially, like Qatar, there's a race there.
I mean, I'd say Formula One has integrated this by push. The negative fan perception of the Formula One races being there is, oh, this is all about money, right? What Formula One has managed pretty well is avoiding the whole human rights situation and having that argument. And I think they laid the groundwork for that back in, when was it? When did they go to Abu Dhabi first? 2012, something like that. But when it first happened, and just people didn't quite care about it as much yet. And since then, the conversation has been very, very well kept at the negative thing about this is how it's done for the money and how the track's maybe not that interesting. The larger issues behind it are, let's call it, well regulated, and are kind of, pushed aside for less politically charged questions.
It's basically, here's a bunch of money.
Which is not a good thing. Yeah.
It's basically, here's a bunch of money. Let's just forget about these 11 things for the week that you're here.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Formula One has done a good job here, but has done a bad deed, you know?
Yeah.
But the
bad deed has been done by FIFA as well, and by the IOC, the International Olympic Committee. Right, it's been done by all of them, so it's more about now kind of saving it, I guess, or kind of making it sort of weirdly acceptable in a way to some that you are profiting off it, and that's like the main bad argument for it.
Yeah, from a PR perspective, that's what you want, right? You want people to go, exactly. Well, it's happened, but let's at least, you know.
Yeah, you can still kind of like really repress it in the back of your mind.
Yeah, and I think what the World Cup has done is, because it's a lot higher profile and because you have a lot more people speaking out against it, which is, I was really, really surprised by it, because in Formula One, that didn't happen much, let's say it.
Well, and this is really interesting because there's more focus on the World Cup and how stadiums are built and whatever, maybe because also when Brazil hosted the World Cup, there was reports of all the labor going on, and it was not right either, not human rights like equivalent or acceptable in any way. People died there as well. But maybe, damn, I lost where I was going. I lost the train of thought.
Yeah, I will say this because I think we shouldn't spend much more time on this topic because we're not a podcast for geopolitical problems. And I'm certainly not informed enough to offer an opinion here that should be considered anything more than an opinion. As I was watching the Al Jazeera video earlier, they were going on and on every now and again about how Saudi Arabia has made changes and how they're improving and how, on the human rights situation, how they're approaching the West and that, and how they're really doing their best, and how we should offer them a chance. And I thought they started their report by saying how Saudi Arabia isn't a democracy. It's a monarchy. So you have a center of power. And I find it a bit hard to consider these rather small, pretty incremental changes that are done to make the country more palatable to the West, to consider those as a major step forward when you don't have a democratic process behind them, right? If you have someone who can change the rules of a country, whose aim it is to make these things make the country more palatable, and then to say, yeah, but you know, oh, women can drive by themselves now. That's a great advancement. But you hold all the power. You make the decisions. Your goal is it to follow or fall into a more human rights respecting general way in your country. You can't tell me this is it. You can't tell me this is the extent to which you and your people are willing to, or well, to which this is the extent to which you are making your people willing to change.
I mean, that's the whole argument of the having one person in power has so many benefits if that person is good for the people and only acting for the good of the people, like the good tyrant would. But yeah, that's a whole different question. I want to finish my thought. I remembered it again. And what I wanted to say is, so there was reports about Brazil stadium buildings and Qatar stadium buildings. And with Jeddah, the track for F1, it was built so quickly, like it was a bit behind pace to start building, and they built it in like a amazing time point. Like there was pictures per day that were uploaded, and you just saw insane improvements. I forget the exact time it was built in, but it was like a few weeks, a whole F1 track.
It was quick, yeah.
And people, that was being like amazed at on the internet in general and like Twitter. And it was like, oh, that's incredibly fast. Is something going on? But I didn't ever see a report about like crazy human rights abuse during the building of that track, for example, as far as I can remember, at least. So like, just back to another PR best practice, I guess, from F1 or the FIA in terms of like the whole situation going on there, just to close my thought. I just wanted to point that out.
I just think, you know, there are things that are cultural and there are things that I don't think a country should have to change for the perception of the West. I think we in the West like to think that our way of living is this is right. The right way and this is the wrong way. And I think there are some things that we don't have the place to culturally change, but I don't think human rights, I don't think the respect of each person, the individuality of each person, and the right to decide their own life in a legal sense of each person, and things like capital punishment and incredible harm that might befall people who are whipped, for example, I don't think they should be negotiable. And then if there are these innegotiable things and you want to get your country closer to or more palatable to the West or to other countries that subscribe to these beliefs, you can't tell me that, you know, small incremental change in a single power country are all that impressive. Those are things to appease, not to assimilate.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. It wasn't enough, in my opinion.
That's why I'm
worried that when a stress test comes, the small changes that will have been made or that have been made will be shown as what they were, which is attempts to appease, and then you have a situation where there's a real stress test and there wasn't enough done and someone gets really, really hurt. And that might very well also be Qatari people, right? If there's a situation where you told the police, let people do something, and they think, well, no, this is against our laws, right? This is against who we are. And you see a bunch of drunk hooligans around, and both sides start getting violent, the police might also get hurt there. Anyone might get hurt. It's not a good situation.
Agreed. Good summary. Fully agree with that.
Let's talk about winter sports and my favorite winter sports, which was that.
Oh my God, I was just going to do the same thing.
In 2002, the Australian ice skater in the ice skating race won because everyone ahead of him fell over. And that's a better story than Eddie the Eagle. And I'm not apologizing for that.
Okay, that's great, because I was just going to say, on to my next topic, I love bobsledding. It's awesome. It's always been one of my most favorite Winter Olympics things to watch, because like either it's the skeleton is awesome. I know it's not bobsledding. But then you have the two person, the three person, the four person, and just the way they all interact, and the tracks are just insane. I love bobsledding.
Yeah, bobsledding is fun. Skeleton is crazy to me. They steer with their shoulders. Oh, did you know that? They don't have like little handlebars. They push their shoulders into the ice.
They have like special pads, and it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a really famous, she was British. Lucy, I think her name was Lucy something. A really famous bobsledder, skeleton racer. Yeah, she was during the London Olympics. She won. And she was hugely impressive. And she was on Top Gear once, and she was talking about it. And so I push in and I push there. And it was just crazy to listen to.
What was always nuts to me is seeing the speed traps, essentially, of like on, they go so fast, and they go head first, laying on their stomach. It's just insane to me. I mean, that's skeleton. Yeah. Bobsledding is, I always enjoyed seeing the start. If it's like four people, it'll be like two people pushing, and then they like hop in, pulled in their little bars, and then they just go. And those are fun, because apart from leaning, the back guys don't really do much. So if you're the second guy sitting there, like, you have a pretty chill athlete job. All you have to do is stay fit.
I don't think so.
And
lean. What I was also always thought, did you know that there is like reverse skeleton? There's something called luge or luge.
Oh yeah, luge. Yeah.
Luge. Yeah. And that is, so they it's one or two people, and it's similar to bobsledding, right? So your head is at the back, but it's just on like a little ski chair. And it's essentially like skeleton, but you're on your back, and it's also crazy.
Yeah, but you're looking forwards, because you said backwards earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So you're looking forward, yeah.
Yeah, but and that one's back also is nuts.
Towards the ground. Yeah,
but there, don't you steer with your feet there on that one?
You might.
But that is such a balance game on the double. Like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. The double luge. Wow, look, we're experts on this. Winter Olympics. Fuck yeah, let's go.
Do you happen to know why a winter biathlon is skiing and shooting? I never got that. I tried to look it up earlier, and I couldn't find an easily accessible answer.
As opposed to?
Yeah, I don't know, dude. Skiing and swimming, like anything other than shooting, I found it.
Mean because triathlon is running, biking, and swimming? You think biathlon is two of those?
No, well, I'm not questioning. I'm not questioning which sport they'd be. I'm just questioning why the second one is shooting. Like, of all the things you could have done, of all the athletic proficiencies you could have looked for, why is it skiing and shooting? Why is it not sledding and shooting? Why is it not okay, go the other way. So someone went, okay, we really need a test of shooting. Who went, well, we got to do it on skis.
Okay, so I'm going to fact check myself, but I'm going to just guess. So I assume that this sport was named after it was actually made a sport. So it used to be, because I'm assuming that it's a Nordic sport where there's always a lot of snow, people went hunting a lot that way, and they would do that for a really long time and do hunting. So those two things were combined. And as they are separately considered sports as well, at some point there was competitions and animals turned into targets and it's expanded. And that's what I'm going to guess, and I'm going to fact check it.
Yeah, I could. So that is the kind of headcanon I've always had in my head of thinking, like, well, it's got to be that, right? But I wonder if there's a real story to it.
Let's see. Wikipedia always knows the truth. History. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, the biathlon is rooted in the skiing traditions of Scandinavia, where early inhabitants revered the Norse god Uller as both the sky god and the hunting god. In modern times, the activity that developed into this sport was an exercise for Norwegians as an alternative training for the military. Norwegian skiing regiments organized military skiing contests in the 18th century, divided into four classes: shooting at mark while skiing at top speed, downhill race among trees, downhill race on big hills without falling, and a long race on flat ground while carrying a rifle and military pack. In modern terminology, these military contests included downhill slalom, biathlon, and cross-country skiing. One of the first known ski clubs, Tyrisil Skytte og Skilabber Forening, the Tyrisil Rifle and Ski Club, was formed in Norway in 1861 to promote national defense at the local level. 20th century variants include Forsvarerint, the military contestant, a 17-kilometer cross-country race with shooting, and a military cross-country race at 30 kilometers, including marksmanship. All right, so it's a military thing based off gods, but Nordics was correct, so that's good.
I mean, most of the Winter Olympics are built for and by the Nordics. Just really fun. Denmark is the most successful country in the Winter Olympics, with I
Really?
think 300 over 300 medals, and like a good majority of them being gold. I say a good majority. I'm not actually sure how much or if it's a majority, but a large amount of those medals are gold.
Denmark. Go Denmark.
I also saw that ages ago. It was really funny. I think it was the American junior team beat the UdSSR All-Stars team in ice hockey by 4-5. And in the last minute, the UdSSR like absolutely bang tackles one of the American players into the wall and to not lose, and they still lose. And it just looked like one of those situations of stuff like, oh, you know you fucked up. Like, you have like the German national team playing like some low league like youth team, and then the youth team wins and it's like, uh-oh, you might have just lost
Uh-oh.
yourself a job.
Oh, man. Anyway, winter sports, man. Winter sports.
They're fun. I used to love watching ski jumping, what's that called in English?
Yeah,
So
ski
fun.
jumping.
Yeah, so fun. My favorite was I love the red lines that they like edit onto the surface, and I'd always try to see with my eye if they got ahead or behind. And I mean, I wasn't an adult. I wasn't able to just look at it. Yeah, that was fun.
To be honest, because I was a kid watching ski jumping like every year, and they already used AR technology then to like blend in the furthest jump or whatever first place was at that moment. And by the way, what always topped ski jumping was ski flying, which are just like really massive ski jumps, like where they go, instead of 110 being the longest jump, they go 160. Just insane. And I think when we were growing up, there was one decent German jumper that the whole media and everyone always followed. I forget his name right now, but He always had this Milka chocolate helmet. I can't think of it. Martin Schmitz. There we go. That was always, yeah, he was pretty good. You do not recognize him. So me being 2 or 3 years older than you, I guess, doesn't.
Maybe that's
make, it. Makes a big difference. Anywho. Yeah. So much for winter sports. Good topic.
So much for geopolitics.
Yeah. I hope we don't have to issue an apology for anything we said.
I don't plan on flying Qatar Airways.
We're on the human side. Anyway, on to F1.
Let's go. Right, Formula One. I don't think a lot of crazy things happen. For me, the most exciting thing is that Brazil is looking at huge rain this weekend. And Brazil in the rain will be really, really exciting.
I just hope that it just kind of rains a little bit, enough to have a big impact, but not enough to redo any of the other recent wet races where it's kind of like one lap and done.
Yeah, of course.
So I hope it'll be a good weekend in Brazil. I'm very excited because the track is awesome and it's generally an awesome atmosphere. I mean, there's not much more to play for, but further down in the midfield, there's a lot to play for. So I hope there'll be a lot of camera coverage on that. And I think Max is still probably going to win the race, to be honest. Doesn't even matter car is better at the track or whatnot. He's probably going to win.
So Max is a fantastic rain driver, right? My thought is if it's a full wet weekend, I think Hamilton really, really has a chance to challenge, because in the wet, the Red Bull straight line speed advantage isn't going to be that tough, and it's really come down to who of the drivers is a good wet race driver. And as Hamilton is one of the best in the world, and so is Verstappen, so we're going to have a really exciting time, in my humble opinion.
Agreed. And I think Hamilton is chomping at the bit to get another chance at like challenging and racing Max instead of, you know, Leclerc or Russell or whoever's further down the line. And we saw last race, which was pretty cool. So it'd be cool to see it come to fruition. It's amazing that only 11 months after, or like there's still the reigning 8-time World Constructors World Championship, but it's like, man, I'd love to see Mercedes win. Not even a full season later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Mercedes doesn't win this season at all. I also wouldn't mind if Hamilton doesn't win this season at all. I know a lot of people are saying, well, it will kind of tarnish his reputation and his achievement. In my opinion, it really doesn't. Every successful Formula One driver has had a point in their career where they just weren't, like a season that was slightly worse than the others. And that's what this will be for Hamilton. And I think he still raced a really good season because he really came back in the second half.
Yeah, I don't think he had a bad individual season. Like the car just wasn't great. He's had a great streak of always having a solid, or pretty much always having a solid car.
I'd say his first half of the season was, well, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't a Hamilton season. It was,
it was a testing.
Yeah, I think he had to recover from the whole last season bit, and then the car wasn't what he thought it was going to be, and blah, 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 blah.
We can talk about it. He did make a couple mistakes. It's fair.
He made a couple of mistakes. He had a few races where he just wasn't up to speed. He didn't do super well in qualifying compared to Russell.
If the car was adequate, like where it was in the past, and he then switched in the second half, he would have definitely won a race. So like it's both for sure, 100%. It just hasn't come together, and that's fine. Sure. He wants to, like, that's some of the news, I guess, to report is that he's going to sit down with Mercedes to sign a multi-year deal in December. So I think probably another 3-year deal. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. On that, like the whole like Ricardo surprise Pikachu face reaction of like, oh my God, Hamilton is signing another deal. If you expected Hamilton to not race in Formula One after next season, I don't know where you've been living, but that's crazy. Of course he was going to. Like anyone saying, oh, yeah, yeah. And then by the end of 2024, Ricciardo can replace Hamilton at Mercedes. No way. It was absolutely no way.
No, no. There'll be too much talent. He'll be off. Like he'll be in a Hülkenberg situation, kind of, right? You're out of the thing for like multiple years. And how is that going to then go?
He's more likely of replacing Perez at Red Bull. And I don't think he's going to go to Red Bull either. I mean, maybe as a reserve driver, but...
He is in talks with Mercedes and Red Bull currently.
Yeah, I saw that as well. But I don't think he's going to become the Red Bull second driver again. I just don't think so. I think Red Bull has too many better options. Perez, they can just give Perez a one-year deal. Better option than Ricciardo.
That's actually an interesting... Continue, sorry.
They have Nyck de Vries, who they're now grooming is a wrong word, but who they're now entertaining to become maybe a Red Bull driver. They have Tsunoda, who's improving. Granted, I don't think Tsunoda will be in the Red Bull, but he might if he has an explosive rise next season. Red Bull just has too many good options to go for Ricciardo again. This whole like, oh, I'll leave the sport for a year and I'll come back and I'll prove everyone wrong. With whom? With whom?
But here's the point where I think Red Bull could actually really use Ricciardo. Because of what you just said, I agree with every assessment you gave on the driver. I think having Ricciardo would be a great plan C. So Perez doesn't, like his form is down. De Vries after a year in F1 doesn't adapt well, definitely not ready for Red Bull seat, has to stay in AlphaTauri and kind of stagnates. Tsunoda stays where he is. Falls out of F1, they give the seat to Liam Lawson. Also not like super great, right? But then further down in the junior chain, they have, I think, Iwasa, and I'm not sure, a couple other drivers maybe. They don't have a huge depth in terms of their driver roster for the next 2-3 years, necessarily.
Well, not in terms like of
guaranteed quality. Drivers, but... Exactly, and they've... even kind of admitted by certain decisions that they've made that they haven't made the greatest decisions in their junior program. They've definitely had some great talent come from there in the past, but the last few years, it just hasn't produced as much as one would have maybe expected based on the past. So obviously Red Bull, if they continue to have a great car, they can get any driver they want, but you know, signing Ricciardo as a reserve driver for the plan, like the fifth option, is not necessarily a bad idea if that's what they're thinking going into it.
Yes.
It's not good for Ricciardo.
But it's a lot of ifs, and it's not good for Ricciardo. And yeah, I just think him going out of the sport was a mistake. I think he thinks it'll give him leverage, and I think it'll do the opposite. Because, you know, you can say, okay, who does Red Bull have in their junior teams outside of the people who are on the grid right now? But then we've seen how ready anyone on the grid is these days to just take someone else. There's enough really talented drivers that want into or back into the sport that you can take. They're not that reliant anymore on the junior categories.
Well, there's a lot of drivers that will have to prove themselves next year. Put that way.
So will Ricciardo.
Yeah, but Ricciardo doesn't have to do it on track.
When and if Ricciardo comes back to Formula One, I don't think it'll be a discussion of, oh, we can be assured that he'll perform. I think McLaren...
No, I think...
I mean, do I believe that Ricciardo still has it in him to be a top-level driver? Yes. Would I wager the future of my multi-million euro empire on it? No. Not if I have cheaper options that...
I'm just saying there's a lot of drivers that have to prove themselves next year, and yeah, it could lead to opportunities. And there's
opportunities, yeah, but not in the top three teams.
No. Agreed. No, he could have just as well, like this year waiting, like I think this year waiting is about equal or even more damaging than having taken the seat at Haas or at Williams and just proven himself in the car for a year. Just shown how adaptable, good, whatever he is in the new regulations as well to really cement that, and you know, then switch teams. But
yeah,
after a year out, he's not going to get anything better than a midfield car or a rebranded car that's trying to, you know, start up a new image with a big face and PR or whatever. It's not going to be a top tier car immediately, at least.
Quite frankly, it's a bit ridiculous that Hülkenberg, after two, three years out of the sport, is as considered as he is. And he's had a drive every season since he left where he showed good quality, right? And I don't think, I mean, Ricardo doing this for him, it'll be on merit. I don't, yeah. He's had the win and he's had last race in Mexico, which was good. But he hasn't been the Red Bull or even the Renault Daniel Ricciardo in a long time. And I think when he comes back, and if he tries to come back, then I don't think anyone will remember that Daniel Ricciardo. They'll remember the Daniel Ricciardo that is driving right now. And that's not one that you might consider seriously for the future of your team, if you're a top team or even an upper midfield team. Not if you have younger options available that also don't have the habit of switching major teams every few years.
That's what's really important about him finishing on three strong races and three strong finishes. Mm-hmm. Exactly that, because he's going to be, you're only as good as your last race. Well, if your last three races were good, then that's what you're going to mostly be based off. And you're going to go out and into that free year with a lot of positivity, actually, because people weren't expecting anything and you've overperformed in the short term in terms of like how expectations were set and everything. So great. Like, beat your teammate twice more and come away with solid points and, you know, just help McLaren win that constructors or battle, I guess, with Alpine. And awesome. Great job. And then hopefully that narrative carries over, because narratives play a strong part in all of this.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we will see.
Yeah. On to, I guess, we've dropped the name a couple times, but Nico Hülkenberg, it seems like, is the other main contender for the Haas seat that currently is occupied by Mick Schumacher. And I've seen multiple reports now that he is very, 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 very likely to become the next driver. Helmut Marko said a couple words too on the matter. And in general, it just looks like it's getting cemented in. The only positivity I can draw away from it is that the streak of a German driver in every season of F1, or like for like the last ever years, is still continuing. So I'm very happy about that. However, I really think that Haas is making a mistake going for Hülkenberg.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. Hülkenberg used to be one of my favorite drivers when he was still driving. So I don't doubt that he's a good driver that will perform well for Haas. I just think the decision that, I just don't think they, yeah, I agree that they made the wrong decision. They haven't yet, but we are strongly suggesting that they might have done it behind closed doors. And yeah, I don't think they made a bad decision. I just think they made the wrong decision.
On the other hand, there's also a bunch of experts and pundits and whatever that all have said consistently throughout the year until now, they fully expect Mick to stay, et cetera, et cetera. It makes the most sense in terms of like normal development, et cetera, like 3 years, you know, that is the max, but it's okay. And that's what we expect. But now we hear all these other reports going the other way. And you just think, man, you're taking someone who, it's not about his racecraft, because he's shown up. Like, he has a good CV for an F1 driver, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, if you compare all the F1 drivers, he's pretty high up on that list relative to the amount of numbers there are. And he's way past his prime. You're starting a new regulation like era, right? You want to develop with the right drivers, but not everybody's Alonso that's going to race till they're 50, right? So Just seems tough.
Yep.
Yeah. Otherwise, they have to restart with a new talent midway through a regulation, play catch up. And
I mean, I think one of the major things is Mick doesn't have the Ferrari backing as strong anymore, right? Right now, Haas has more money, is less dependent on Ferraris. input there. Mick has lost Ferrari maybe to some degree, so they are going to go for someone else. And yeah, let me ask you this: do you think Mick is going to go with Sauber in 2024?
Yeah, I think he'll definitely get at least a reserve driver role for next season.
He's out of a seat for with whom?
Well, has Théo Pourchaire been announced for Alpha? I assume.
I don't know. But I don't think he's going to go with Ferrari because they have Schwartzman.
And what's his name? They have a couple. Either way, no, I think Mick is going to get a reserve driver role. They haven't all been announced yet. So mm-hmm. he'll be there somewhere. And depending on what the new team name is going to be, because I don't think that's been announced yet, in terms of how far Audi will already be involved as of 2024. But depending on their influence, it could be then. Otherwise, it could be when they relaunch in 2026. But that would be tough. If he doesn't get anything up until then, I almost doubt that he's going to get a seat with Audi team launch in 2026, to be honest, because that's 3 years out of the game.
Yeah, he'll be, and he's only aging. I mean, we've seen with a few drivers that a year away can actually help you, right? Albon,
even Alonso, two. Even like two can some.
Maybe even.
Didn't Raikkonen step away for 2 years?
Raikkonen stepped away for at least a year as well, yeah. Yeah,
but I just don't like think 2 to 3 years out of the game is tough, man. Like that's yeah. rough.
Yeah,
because it'd be 2003, 2004, and 2005, 3 years.
Yeah, out of 22 to all those years, and then you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what happens for a boy.
Yep.
And to be fair, no other Schumacher except for Michael has been nearly as successful. I mean, Ralph has been semi-successful, kind of like Ricardo-level successful. David Schumacher, Mick's cousin, hasn't really been successful. Yeah.
Was he an F1 driver?
No, he was an F3, or he is an F3 driver or something like that, Formula Renault, Super Formula. But he injured himself recently, badly, actually. Yeah. But none of them are like super excelling, you know?
Mm. Well,
that's life.
That makes Mick on the that puts Mick on the podium of Schumacher's. Silver linings, baby. Silver linings.
Third out of four.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, any other F1 news? But I don't really think so.
None that I'm aware of. And I think we're approaching time anyways.
Yeah. So what's your prediction? Podium, top three?
Verstappen, Hamilton, Perez? Because Perez is going to get second in the constructors. And Ferrari's going to be bad. Because of the altitude.
So Hamilton won, huh?
No, Verstappen, Hamilton, Perez.
Verstappen, Hamilton. Okay. Verstappen, Hamilton. I'll say Hamilton... Leclerc Perez.
I'm not Leclerc Perez. Okay, what happens to Verstappen?
He gets unlucky with a safety car having pitted right before.
Fair enough.
Off a Latifi crash. If I get this right, you owe me a case of Guinness.
Sure.
It's on
record. I'll take that bet.
All right, then to close our episode, let us find a random article on Wikipedia to determine next week's topic.
Oh, we do that live? No, we do that after the episode.
We've done it live before.
We've done it live before? Do you want to do it live? Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. So. It is generating. These times take quite a while.
No, they don't. We're going through a bunch of them. I don't lie to our audience.
Billy Morrison.
I don't know who that is.
Guitar and vocals for The Cult, among others. But he plays guitar with Billy Idol?
I mean, I'm not super down to do people, but we can do...
Fair enough.
We can do something relating to that, like a band or an instrument.
An instrument might be good.
We can do guitars. You play the guitar.
Sometimes. Man, random Wikipedia. There's a lot of weird Wikipedia articles. That's what you notice.
Yeah, a lot of them are people, which is why I don't want to do them.
Yeah.
Oh, I got wasps here. That could be fun. Oh, can we do the nyum nyum parrot? It looks super cute. Oh, we can do parrots. We can do songbirds. Speaking of music.
What about a bottle of pills?
We can do bottles and or pills.
Let's do bottles. That's a good topic.
We can do bottles.
Bottles is a good topic.
I'm a fan of bottles.
Yeah, me too.
Coca-Cola bottles and Mexican Coke versus non-Mexican Coke.
All right. In summary, our next topic will be bottles.
Bottles.
Short, concise, awesome. Randomness is good.
All right.
Then on that bombshell, thank you for listening and talk to you next week.
And good night. Bye-bye.
Night.